official-looking seal on it, but it had no real value to anyone but me. Nonetheless, Personalized Programming, Inc. was now a legal corporation in the state of Florida. I really loved the work I was doing with Personalized Programming. If anything, my passion for computers had grown stronger since that first day in Radio Shack. Each computer I installed was like a dear friend I left behind to serve my clients. I may have looked like a one-man company, but in reality, I had left my workers at every one of my clients' sites. They worked for free day and night, and they never complained. Once I started selling and supporting full system solutions for my clients, Personalized Programming began generating more than $100,000 a year. That was a far cry from the $5,000 I was earning at Santa Fe just a few years earlier. In addition, Biltwood Love was still earning a decent living. Through all of this, I had hardly changed my lifestyle. The money the businesses were earning got donated to the temple to support land purchases and the expenses incurred serving the community. The perfection of how everything was unfolding was enough to silence the personal mind. It was around that time when I noticed that my mental concepts separating worldly and spiritual had finally dissolved. Everything began to appear as the miraculous perfection of the flow of life. If I had my way, I would have continued my life in that direction. But somehow it seems that in my experiment with surrender, I never have my way. So it was in early 1980 when I received two phone calls on the same day that would end up initiating the next stage of my phenomenal journey. The calls seemed innocent enough. They were from people looking for a medical billing system. What they wanted was the ability to do patient and insurance billing using a personal computer. I didn't have a system that could do that, but I told them I would look around and get back to them. After some searching, I found a system through a contact I had in Miami. It was supposed to be a nationally distributed software package with successful installations. I should have checked references. I got literature and pricing on the system and got back to my prospective clients with a bid. I had no idea what I was getting into. Once I started testing the software, it didn't take long to realize that the package was absolute garbage. There was no way I was going to represent that software. When I called my clients to give them the bad news, they each had the same response. They said that they had heard I was a very reliable programmer who had written custom software for numerous businesses. Why couldn't I write software for their medical practice business? I remember I was sitting on the floor of my small office. The little voice in my head was going on about how it took so long to write software versus selling someone else's. Writing a patient and insurance billing system would be a much larger project than anything I had ever done. I told my clients that it could take as much as 2 years to finish such a system. Unfortunately, they both said they were willing to wait if they could give input along the way. I definitely didn't want to get into a programming project of that size. But though there was no definitive agreement with these clients, there was my agreement to honor life's flow. My mind became still as I realized that I really had no choice but to surrender to the situation life had put me in. It was just like all the other times I let go when I didn't want to. I took a deep breath and told both clients that I would try my best to write a billing system for their medical practices. The moment I hung up from these phone calls, I reached over and picked up the standard insurance claim form that was lying on the floor next to me. I had obtained it earlier to see what an insurance bill looked like. I began thinking about how I was going to structure a program that would collect and store the diverse data necessary to fill out this form. Little did I know that those first thoughts were the start of a journey into the computerization of the medical industry that would span almost 3 decades. People have often asked me how back in 1980 I had the foresight to focus Personalized Programming on the medical industry. Now you see that the answer is simple. I didn't do a thing except serve with all my heart and soul what life brought before me. But the scope of the task I had been given this time was way beyond anything I had ever faced. There were no meetings or budgets or project plans. There was just me. I immediately started to code the software that would come to be called the Medical Manager, a product that would end up revolutionizing the U.S. medical practice management industry. I know it is difficult for people to understand, but to me, writing code was the same as having a conversation with another human being. I didn't have to think about what I wanted to say or how to say it. There was just a natural flow directly from the stream of my thoughts into the machine. When I was writing a program, the voice in my head would speak in the computer language I was using. I didn't think in English and then convert to the language. My primary thoughts were in the computer language to begin with. Because of this, I could just sit down at the computer and write perfectly structured code. We are back to our earlier discussion of inspiration and where it comes from. Beethoven heard music, and he wrote it down. Artists have creative visions, and they manifest them. I never saw the medical manager all at once in some grand vision. Nonetheless, every day, the constant flow of inspiration let me know exactly where the program needed to go. I simply sat at the computer and wrote down the spontaneous stream of inspired thoughts in the form of code. I wrote and I wrote with a fervor and passion that was almost frightening. First the patient record, then the medical procedures that needed to be billed. Everything I did to the absolute best of my ability. I was not only writing the program for these two clients, I was writing the best program I possibly could as my gift to the universe. The flow of inspiration was such that I was not allowed to cut a single corner. This commitment to detail would end up distinguishing the medical manager from almost all competitive medical billing systems on the market. In short, this thing wanted to be as close to perfect as possible, regardless of how long it took or how unreasonable it appeared from a business perspective. The fact is, there never really was a business perspective. I figured I could probably sell the program to some other doctors in town, but I never once thought about broader distribution. I was able to cover the cost of program development out of my own pocket because of the perfection of how events had unfolded. And I don't use the term perfection lightly. During the time I was writing the medical billing system, a subdivision opened up in the woods just 1 mile down the road from Temple property. Built with Love landed a number of contracts for custom houses in that subdivision, which meant I didn't have to go anywhere to handle the jobs. In addition, personalized programming had its existing clients. I hired a young man part-time to help me do some of the small custom programming jobs for those clients. I trained him on the old programs I had written, and I reviewed and tested his code. Without realizing it, while I thought I was training him, it was really me who was getting trained on how to manage programmers. That was a skill I would definitely need in the near future. Turns out, I was destined to manage hundreds of highly skilled software developers. Chapter 34, The Early Programmers. No person in their right mind would think they were going to sit down and write an entire medical billing system on their own. I, however, was not in my right mind. I had accepted the project as the next task given to me by the flow of life. That was a very holy thing to me. My entire spiritual path was focused around my experiment with surrender. In order to keep my distance from the inner chatter, I still maintained my regular meditation schedule and continued my moment-to-moment practice of centering myself. Every time I sat down at the computer to work on the program, I took a breath and remembered that I was writing this as a gift to the universe. I was sitting on a tiny planet spinning through outer space, and this was the task that had been given to me. It never even occurred to me to ask for assistance. The program was about half complete when my guardian angel sent me unasked for but much needed assistance. Some moments in our lives are marked by destiny. Such was the brief moment in time that occurred one fall day in 1980. I was navigating through the Sunday morning crowd on the temple porch when a young lady approached me. I did not recognize her, and she spoke so softly that I could hardly hear her above the crowd. As a way of introducing herself, she said that she had just graduated from the University of Florida, where she had taken a few programming classes. She had heard that I had been programming and wanted to do work with me, even if it meant no salary to begin with. Her name was Barbara Duncan. I certainly needed help, but I couldn't imagine how anyone could help me. I had been writing the program directly from my mind into the computer. There were no hook points where someone else could tie in. In addition, I didn't know this person, and she seemed very shy. Fortunately, I was well trained in watching these thoughts pass through my mind, rather than blindly listening to them. I simply stopped for a moment, took a breath, and recognized all this negativity as my mind's initial resistance to change. I immediately let go and surrendered to the reality of the situation. This person had sincerely offered her services, and I was certainly in need of help. I told her that because I was used to working alone, I couldn't make any promises. However, I was willing to give it a try. We set up for a meeting in a few days, and I told her that she should think about a reasonable starting salary because I wanted to compensate her. The level of talent and competence that was hidden inside this person who just happened to show up at the temple is beyond my comprehension. Barbara was definitely very scared and shy in the beginning. Then for the next 20 years, she kept stepping forward to accept and excel at whatever was asked of her. She also started coming to all the temple's daily services and moved in shortly after starting to work for me. Barbara was really Personalized Programming's first full-time employee, and she became a foundation block of both the company and the temple community. It turns out that this shy young lady I met on the temple porch that day had a brilliant mind and the heart of a warrior. When Barbara started working for me, I was already halfway done with the program. I had never actually verbalized my thoughts to anyone, so sharing my vision for the overall system with another person helped tremendously. We made a wonderful team, and it was clear that Barbara was perfectly capable of taking my vision and running with it. This became essential once the number of programmers began to grow. In short, Barbara was a gift from God. She showed up exactly when I needed her, at a time I was not even wise enough to know that I needed her. I never looked for her. She just appeared. In truth, it was the same with Rada. From day one, she took responsibility for all the accounting and office management functions of the businesses in the temple. 30 years later, she is still living at the temple and managing its affairs. It was as though these people were hand-picked for the disciplined spiritual lifestyle of the temple and were also perfectly suited for the highly skilled jobs that were being created. I saw this happen again and again as the businesses expanded. It felt like I was dancing with the perfection of the universe. I didn't fully realize it at the time, but witnessing the results of my surrender experiment was doing more to get rid of the burdensome sense of me than my hours of spiritual practices. I was well aware that I was not causing these events to unfold so perfectly, but I was deeply honored to watch the perfection of life unfold before my eyes. We brought on a couple of additional programmers over the next year. By the time we were done with the first version of the software, there were 4 of us working full-time. We needed the additional help coding, mostly because the designs Barb and I were turning out were never the simplest way to get things done. They were simply the best way. For example, one of the most interesting and important modules we wrote was the one that printed the insurance claim forms. I remember the days I spent with my clients going over their insurance billing needs. You basically had to be a rocket scientist to understand all the minute differences between how these practices were filling out the supposedly standardized forms. But they insisted that each of these differences was essential in order to get properly paid by different insurance companies. Barb and I managed to develop a very sophisticated, template-driven system that would allow the practices themselves to specify how they wanted to fill out the forms for any particular insurance company. We were committed to developing a system that would perfectly handle a practice's insurance billing needs, and this became one of the main reasons for the rapid acceptance of the software. In a very short period of time, medical manager practices would be defining hundreds of different templates needed to handle the nation's insurance companies. This provides a glimpse of the level we went to with the medical manager, even with the very first version. We kept bearing down and doing everything to the best of our ability. I had never in my life been involved in anything that demanded the level of perfection of that program. It was like a polished diamond by the time it was done. To me, it was a living entity, and I felt tremendous respect every time I touched it. Just look at the amazing flow of life's events that created this program. I felt like it had a life of its own, and we were just here to serve it. It was the beginning of 1982, and after 2 years of intense development, we started installing the program for my original two clients. Given that none of us had ever written such a comprehensive program before, the installations moved along very smoothly. I never once thought about what would happen after those sites were installed. We were completely focused on writing and delivering the absolutely best system we could, because that was the task life had given us. The program's destiny, after the initial installations, would have to unfold completely on its own, exactly as had happened every step of the way so far. Chapter 35, Preparing for Launch. Along with the great strides the program was making, I was pleased to see events unfolding that benefited those around me, especially Barb, who was working really hard. Around this time, my neighbor Bob Tilchin decided to move, and the temple purchased his property. Barb got to move into that house, and she also got a well-deserved new office when Personalized Programming relocated its 5 employees into a new building on temple grounds. I got a nicer office as well, and some very important events were destined to take place there. None more important than a destiny-filled phone call I took while sitting at my computer one day. We had just finished our first installation of the medical manager, and I was finishing up the manual for the program when the phone rang. It was Systems Plus, the distributor of the accounting program we were selling. I was a very small dealer of theirs, and they didn't generally call me. I had placed a call a few days earlier to report problems with a new piece of software they were releasing. The customer representative at Systems Plus introduced herself as Lorelei. She was very apologetic for the problems they were having. At some point in her apologies and assurances, she told me that I should remain receptive to their new software releases because they planned on being the leading company for small business software. She said they were expanding beyond general accounting and were currently looking for a top real estate package, legal package, and medical billing package. When I heard her say medical billing package, she caught me by surprise. At first, I was too embarrassed to say anything. Systems Plus was this big Silicon Valley computer company, and I was a guy in the woods who had taught himself to program. Sure, I had spent the last 2 years writing our medical billing program, but it had only been installed in one small doctor's office for a few weeks. Though the voice in my head was assuring me that Systems Plus would have no interest in my little software program, I took a breath, surrendered to the moment, and informed Lorelei that I had just finished a medical billing package. She started to say something and then stopped. After a brief pause, she said, "Wait a minute. My boss just walked by. Let me see if he's interested." I had absolutely no idea what to think. When Lorelei returned to the call, she told me her boss was very interested in reviewing any software that could do a medical practice's billing. She encouraged me to send in the system along with the manual I was just completing. We got off the phone, and I was stunned. What had just happened? I had never even thought about finding a software distributor. Then one of the industry's top business software distributors calls me in the middle of the woods of Alachua, Florida, and ends up asking to see my system. I found out later that when Lorelei mentioned her boss, she was referring to the president of the company, Rick Merrillick, who had just happened to walk by her desk at that exact moment. Perhaps now you can see why I've learned to so deeply honor the flow of life. It took me a week or two to pull everything together and ship it off to Systems Plus's headquarters. There was something very surreal as I stood there offering the finished package up to the universe. I had simply been following the flow. I hadn't had any expectations, hopes, or dreams about anything. For many years now, I had just been putting one foot in front of the other, serving whatever was put before me to the best of my ability. To me, I was not a computer programmer. I was a yogi living in the middle of the woods. I had bought a tiny toy computer for $600 some years earlier and had played around with it. I got tricked into spending 2 years of my life writing a medical billing package after my mind had already decided that writing software was too time-consuming. Now, without my making a single call, I was about to send something I had programmed off to the president of a successful software company out in California. How does such a thing happen, even in a fairy tale? A few weeks later, I got a call from Systems Plus informing me that the company president wanted to fly out to Alachua to meet me face to face. I agreed, and in no time at all, Rick Merrillick was sitting on the couch in my office, telling me that he wanted to distribute my software. He said it was about the best he had ever seen, and he could do a great job representing it in the marketplace. I enjoyed both his frankness and his positive praise, and I immediately felt comfortable working with him. It is important to understand that the way I viewed the unfolding events was that this man sitting before me had been hand-picked by the universal force to take my child out into the world. Just as Barb had shown up out of nowhere and turned out to be the absolutely perfect person to help me, so this man might as well have manifested out of thin air and told me that he had been sent to distribute the software package. I neither contacted another distributor nor viewed any other options. I surrendered to the perfection of the flow. As Rick and I shook hands on our intent to enter into a distribution arrangement, we couldn't possibly have known that for the next few decades, our lives would be involved in a fantastic voyage together. It should come as no surprise that Rick and Systems Plus turned out to be the absolutely perfect distributor for the medical manager product. Life had worked its magic once again. Systems Plus informed me in September that the company was going to launch the medical manager in November at the upcoming 1982 Computer Dealers Exhibition, COMDEX. Held in Las Vegas each year, COMDEX was the largest computer trade show in the country and the second largest in the world. Systems Plus was planning to feature the product in its huge booth, so the pressure was on to get the distribution agreement signed and to ship the finished version of the software out to California. It turns out that the temple had a large retreat scheduled for 1st of October that year for Ram Dass. That was exactly the deadline Systems Plus had given me to send them the finished version. Since I didn't get the software shipped before leaving for the retreat, Ram Dass ended up with it on his lap the entire drive down. At one point, he asked me in his very no-nonsense way of speaking, "Is it any good?" I answered him by saying that I had no idea. It could be worth nothing, or it could be worth $1 million. Turns out that I was off by a few zeros. I always had tremendous respect for Ram Dass, as do all of us who grew up in his aura of absolute honesty with oneself. The perfection of circumstances that had him holding that piece of software just before it launched into the world was amazing to me. Who knows how these things work? I certainly don't claim to know a thing. I watched how this software was conceived, and I saw it attract exactly what it needed to not only get written, but to be a leader right out of the gate. It then magically attracted its own first-rate distributor and was now sitting on the lap of one of the most respected New Age spiritual teachers in the world. This program had a destiny of its own, and it was about to take us all on a journey, the likes of which we never could have imagined. Section 6. The Forces of Natural Growth. Chapter 36. The Foundations of a Successful Business. The launch of the medical manager at the Las Vegas trade show was a sight to behold. I flew out to see Systems Plus at work and to meet the company's people. I had never been to anything like that show in my life. Remember, I had been living in the woods for years. At Systems Plus's booth, the medical manager banners were plastered all over the place. It's one thing to see your kid grow up for 18 years and then watch her honored at her high school graduation. It's quite another thing when your kid was just born a few months ago and was now center stage of a very professional production at a show the size of Comdex. Systems Plus had one of the larger booths at the show, and everyone did a wonderful job presenting the product. The market was ripe for medical billing software, and there was tremendous interest at the booth. I marveled at seeing all the Systems Plus salespeople demonstrate the product. The medical manager had no warm-up period. It went from the quiet woods of Alachua to the big-time lights of Vegas without a single step in between. There was no time to rest on our laurels. Systems Plus immediately started signing up dealers and selling the product. What followed was an avalanche of requests for new product features and customizations. Every specialty wanted something specific, and the staff of almost every practice wanted the program to do things exactly as they were used to doing them on paper. On top of all this, within a month or two of launch, Systems Plus informed me that in addition to the wonderful billing system we had written, the dealers would need appointment scheduling and other practice management features in order to continue successfully selling the product. How were we going to do all of this? None of us had any formal training or experience in medical software design. We had to figure it all out for ourselves, and we did. If you asked me how, I would tell you that my experience with meditation had shown me that there were two very distinct aspects of what we call mind. There was the logical, thought-driven mind that links together what we already know into complex patterns of thought in order to come up with logical solutions. Then there was the intuitive, inspiration-driven mind that can look at a problem and instantly see a creative solution. As it turned out, the years of spiritual work I had done to quiet that voice in my head had opened the door for almost constant inspiration. It seemed that the quieter the mind, the more the solutions became self-evident. This was also true for Barb. Somehow, she had the ability to almost instantly tune into the same creative solutions I had seen and then help me work out the logic. That is how the medical manager was designed, and it is a tribute to this process that we led the industry for many years. Our ability to rapidly design software became legendary. In the meantime, the interest in the product was so phenomenal that we could hardly keep up. It seemed like we were being pushed to our limits in every direction. Take the example of our dealer training seminars. We held our first annual medical manager dealer seminar in a small guest suite at the Gainesville Hilton in the spring of 1983. That one room was plenty large to hold the 15 or 20 people in attendance. Just a few years later, we were renting the entire Gainesville Hilton Hotel, including all of its 200 rooms, conference facilities, and dining rooms. By the early 1990s, we had outgrown the Gainesville Hilton and the guest rooms of all the surrounding hotels. To find a hotel big enough to accommodate us, we had to move the dealer seminar down to Orlando. The spiritual growth that came from keeping up with personalized programming was very deep. The diversity of tasks that now made up my daily life ranged from running the temple and giving spiritual talks 3 times a week to lecturing hundreds of dealer personnel on medical practice management. Despite all these outer changes, I did not become a traditional businessman. I remained a person whose spiritual path was surrendering to the flow of life and putting his entire heart and soul into what life was giving him to do. My twice daily meditation sessions certainly helped to keep it all in perspective. The year 1985 would turn out to be a landmark year. In only 2 years, Systems Plus had signed up more than 100 dealers, and we were averaging more than 150 new medical manager installations every month. Our template design for insurance billing became a huge success, and we were able to do billing to pretty much all insurance companies across the country. But before I could catch my breath, the industry was about to go through a tremendous transformation. As more and more practices computerized, it suddenly became possible to replace paper billing with electronic billing. The advantages would prove to be so enormous that an industry-wide push was about to take place. As successful as we had been with our paper billing, we had no choice but to surrender to the fact that the entire healthcare industry was being pushed into the age of computer-to-computer communications. Unfortunately, that was a topic we knew nothing about. The story of how we ended up leading the industry in that area is just another tribute to the perfection of life's flow. I remember our first design meeting for electronic claims. We realized immediately that the optimal solution would be to use templates, as we had done for paper billing. But doing this for electronic claims was way beyond the capabilities of our existing template design. As far as we knew, nobody had ever attempted such a solution before. The general attitude of my programming team was that it probably could not be done, and they wouldn't even know where to begin, since all the different insurance companies could require very different electronic claim files. Nonetheless, I didn't want to give up. That very same week, another one of life's miracles took place. On Sunday after services, a man introduced himself to me as a former resident at Amrit's yoga community. He wanted to know if I might have some work for him if he settled in the area. His name was Larry Horwitz, and I vaguely remembered that some people at Amrit's had told me how bright he was. I assessed his background and talents, and it dawned on me that once again, life may have sent us the perfect person to tackle the problem at hand. Though Larry had absolutely no background in insurance billing, he got really interested in our innovative approach to electronic claims. I decided I might as well give him a try. After only a broad overview of the project, I left him pretty much on his own to see what he could come up with. By himself, Larry studied every one of the 250 specification books from the nation's insurance companies and mapped out exactly what we would need in order to use templates to handle the entire country with one program. We implemented these changes, and the medical manager now had an electronic billing program with design technology that far surpassed others in the industry. The response was phenomenal. Larry became so busy creating the templates that we had to build an entire department around him. The insurance companies ended up changing their specifications on a regular basis, and 25 years later, Larry Horwitz was still in charge of electronic claims for the company. How does such a person just show up by himself exactly when needed? The medical manager led the industry in electronic claims. Our ability to submit claims directly to the Blue Cross Blue Shield and Medicare insurers nationwide drove the success of the product. By 1987, we were the first practice management system in the country that was able to submit claims electronically in all 50 states. In 2000, the medical manager was recognized for its accomplishments in computerizing the medical industry by being installed in the permanent archives of the Smithsonian Institution. The tremendous work we did and successfully converting tens of thousands of practices to electronic transactions has been preserved for generations to come. I saw all this as just another one of life's miracles. Chapter 37, The Industry Knocks on Our Door. Personalized programming was truly an anomaly. We were located in the middle of the woods in a small building on temple property. None of us were sophisticated business people or experienced professional programmers. We were just people who had been brought together by the energy to do a task. Normally, successful businesses have to plan their growth by developing business plans and financial budgets. In our case, our only business plan was trying to keep up with life's powerful wave that was carrying us forward. Our only budget was to hire whoever showed up who could help us. But no matter how hard we tried, it seemed that life just kept stepping things up to another level. A perfect example of how our miraculous growth took place organically can be seen by some unexpected phone calls I received in the mid-1980s. The first was in the spring of 1985 from a woman who introduced herself as a vice president of Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield. Empire handled New York City and was one of the largest Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance providers in the country. Part of its efforts to convert medical practices in the area to electronic claims was to sell the doctors a practice management system. The company had been developing its own software, but didn't feel it was competitive with the medical manager. I was very honored when she told me that Empire wanted to drop its system and market the medical manager under a private label. You certainly couldn't beat having Blue Cross Blue Shield marketing your product to its doctors. Before I could catch my breath, I was contacted by Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey with the same request. Then came South Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Hawaii, Mississippi, Colorado, and a few others. All those Blue Cross Blue Shields ended up marketing the medical manager to the doctors in their states. I saw this as a living lesson in the power of surrender. For years, I had been willing to let go of my personal preferences and focus on doing the absolute best I could with what life presented me. I hadn't expected anything in return, and I was very humbled to see what was unfolding. By the 1986 to 88 period, personalized programming had about a dozen employees, most of whom were programmers. We were a tiny company, yet we were earning millions of dollars a year in royalties alone. Systems Plus had very quickly realized the enormous potential of the medical marketplace and dropped all its other products to focus exclusively on the medical manager. As head of personalized programming, it was now my job to do business with all these large corporations. I had never worked at that level before, but just as life had given me on-the-job training to become a builder and a programmer, she was now training me to be a corporate executive. I had already seen too much, however, to be a conventional executive. Even in business, I intended to continue trusting the flow of life as my ultimate advisor. One thing I saw again and again on this ride with life was that the right person would show up at just the right time. I literally banked on that perfection, and it is amazing how it kept happening. Even our corporate attorney, Rick Carl, was into yoga and meditation. It seemed that life was surrounding me with spiritually oriented people, not only at the temple, but also my business. How life managed to do this is perhaps epitomized by the following perfectly orchestrated sequence of events. It began when Systems Plus asked us to host a representative from a laboratory equipment company who wanted to meet the medical manager development team. It was rare that Systems Plus sent prospects out to the woods in Alachua, but in this case, there was no choice. Systems Plus staff practically begged me to wear a jacket, laced-up shoes, and have everyone on their best professional behavior. Paul Dobbins was our visitor's name, and he had an extensive background as a senior technical analyst and product manager. I sent Rick Carl, our very presentable attorney, to pick up the gentleman for the Gainesville Airport. When he returned, Rick stuck his head in my office with a grin on his face the size of the Cheshire Cat's. Then, in walks our important guest. The first thing I noticed was that he had a particular piece of jewelry wrapped around his upper arm. It looked remarkably similar to the special bangle that Yogananda used to wear. As it turned out, it was. Paul Dobbins was a follower of Yogananda, had taken the lessons, and been doing Kriya Yoga for many years. You can be sure I was shocked, but imagine how he felt. He flies in from St. Louis on this important business trip to meet the president of the company that wrote the top-rated medical practice management system in the country. He walks into the president's office and sees pictures of Yogananda all over the place. At first, there were no words between us. Paul just sat down on the couch and took in the beauty of the moment. The energy in that room was befitting the presence of a master. I couldn't keep my eyes open, and Paul was visibly overcome. After sitting in silence for a while, I asked him if he would like to see the temple. We walked down the tree-lined road, onto the rustic dirt path, and into that holy place adorned with the pictures of great masters. Needless to say, this was not Paul's usual business trip. Paul extended his visit through the weekend and stayed in a small 10-by-10-foot guest room on temple property. Come Sunday, he didn't want to leave. Paul had apparently gotten into meditation on his own, and he didn't have many people around him who were into yoga. He was overwhelmed by what was going on at the temple and the strength of the Gainesville spiritual community. He came to me after Sunday services with the inevitable question, "May I stay and work for you?" I felt deep in my heart that Paul belonged here and that he really wanted to be part of the temple and the business, but I didn't feel right about him just leaving the company that had sent him here. So I told him, "Let's wait and see how things unfold." Some months later, I received a rather panicky call from Paul. He told me that his company had suddenly been sold and his boss and many other employees were bailing out. Paul was turning in his resignation, but wanted to continue working with the medical manager in some manner. Life's message was perfectly clear. It was time to offer Paul a job. Paul arrived in less than a week with some of his belongings. We allowed him to stay in that same 10-by-10-foot guest room until he found a place of his own. 5 years later, Paul was still living in that tiny room. I have no idea what he did with his belongings, but I do know that he came to morning and evening services at the temple like clockwork. Paul was a tremendous asset to the company, and he showed up exactly when he was needed the most. Shortly after he joined the team, we began getting contacted by the major national laboratories. They all wanted us to interface the medical manager to their labs. Paul was an expert in this field, and we were one of the first practice management systems to implement electronic connectivity with the major lab companies. We could never have succeeded as we did without Paul on our team. When I reflect back on how he came to us, it looks like a gift from the universe. 20 years later, Paul still worked for the company, and to this day, lives in a home with his wife and family bordering temple property. It appears that some things are just meant to be. Chapter 38, The Temple Keeps Growing. Morning meditations took on a whole new meaning as the software company got larger and larger. Not only were meditation and yoga essential for continuing my inward journey, but they were essential for keeping the mind sane. So much is demanded of you when you're running an organization on which so many people rely for their livelihood. My mind needed time to quiet down and keep everything in perspective. Leaving temple services on a winter morning after sunrise, we often find the field covered with a mist of dew. Giant oaks, pines, and hickory trees embrace the field on three sides, and the north side opens up to that beautiful rolling pasture that slopes down to the tree-lined stream. Just standing out there with a quiet mind is heaven on earth. It wasn't that way one misty morning in early December 1988. When we walked out of the quietude of the temple onto the interior field, we heard the roar of large machinery coming from the north. To our utter surprise, we saw giant bulldozers and other land-clearing equipment on our neighbor's rolling field. We didn't know what to make of it, so we walked up the hill to my original house that bordered the pasture. We located some of the workers and asked what was going on. They told us that they had purchased lumber rights to all the trees on our neighbor's property. Our neighbor to the north was a 1,000-plus-acre farm owned by a couple named Wilbur and Juliet. They were wonderful people whose house was on the farthest side of their property from the temple. The land had been in their family for a long time, and they had great respect for the property. We didn't understand what was going on, so we gave them a call. When I was finally able to reach Wilbur, he explained that they were clearing what was left of their native forest and planting slash pines. That would provide a cash crop some 15 to 20 years in the future. I told him I would like to talk to him about it, and I asked if he'd be willing to hold off clearing the land bordering our property until we met. He was hesitant, but told me to tell the foreman to give him a call. In truth, I had no idea what I would say to Wilbur when we met, but I felt a deep obligation to do what I could to protect the beautiful woods on that land. As I drove over to Wilbur's, I focused on remaining open and receptive to the experience at hand so that I could see where life was taking it. As I look back now, I am so grateful that surrender had taught me to willingly participate in life's dance with a quiet mind and an open heart. When I arrived at Wilbur's, there wasn't any openness to selling us the 35 acres that lay between our property and the stream. I explained to him that the trees on that property were beautiful and they should be spared. He agreed with the beautiful part, but he was running a farm, and slash pines was what they had decided to plant on the entire property. Our efforts seemed futile until I offered to lease the property at whatever price would assure him that he earned more than the pines would yield him. Wilbur was an astute businessman, and that caught his attention. There was risk in any crop, but no risk in a secured long-term lease. Wilbur named a price that was significantly higher than any farmer would pay to lease unimproved property. Nonetheless, it was still worth it from our perspective of protecting the trees and pasture of that beautiful piece of land. In the end, we signed a long-term lease with Wilbur that allowed us to preserve, protect, and have use of the property to our north. The property that I had once called the Elysian Fields. This experience only served to reinforce what I was learning from my experiment with surrender. Something that started out looking totally disastrous had ended up with a positive result. Time and again I was seeing that if I could handle the winds of the current storm, they would end up blowing in some great gift. I was beginning to view these storms as a harbinger to transformation. Perhaps change only takes place when there is sufficient reason to overcome the inertia of everyday life. Challenging situations create the force needed to bring about change. The problem is that we generally use all the stirred-up energy intended to bring about change to resist change. I was learning to sit quietly in the midst of howling winds and wait to see what constructive action was being asked of me. If that were the end of the story regarding that property, I would still label it a gift from the universe, but it was far from the end. Just 1 week after signing that lease, another piece of land came up for sale that bordered the core of our community. Remarkably, once we made that purchase, the land we had just leased ended up running along the entire northern border of all our property, thus tying everything together. It left me breathless to see this all unfold the way it did. I was playing a game with life, and every time life made its move, part of my noisy mind fell away. Why was I needed? Everything was unfolding on its own, much better than anything I could ever imagine let alone do. I had said I would purchase adjoining property if it were presented to me, and if we had the necessary cash. The temple was now up to 85 acres, including the leased land. As we will see shortly, this leased land was destined to play a much larger role in what life had in store for us. It was not just with the temple property or the meteoric success of the business that miraculous events were taking place. Little things were happening on a regular basis that were so unlikely they chipped away at the rational mind. One of these amazing events took place during a business trip to Boston in the late 80s. With so many Blue Cross Blue Shields private labeling the medical manager, I had received a request from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts to come up for a meeting. I arrived in Boston late afternoon, and I was starved. I had rushed around all morning and not eaten a thing all day. Instead of eating junk food while traveling, I figured I would get checked into the hotel and find a nice vegetarian restaurant. I didn't know Boston at all, but I had a rental car, and how hard could it be? I got very lost trying to find the restaurant that the concierge had suggested. After close to an hour's drive, I ended up in Harvard Square. I drove around looking for a vegetarian restaurant in that area, but I couldn't find one. In a big city like Boston, I had been hoping for a high-end vegetarian meal. Now, I would be perfectly happy with just brown rice and veggies. I decided to quit driving around and just order room service from the hotel, if I could find my way back. Somehow, I managed to get lost again and ended up back in Harvard Square. It dawned on me that perhaps the universe was trying to tell me something, so I parked my car and got out. This time, I looked more carefully to see if there was even a small place that might have something a vegetarian could eat. I noticed there were some narrow alleys that ran between the buildings. They were not for cars, but shops lined both sides of the walkway. I headed for one of the alleys, and lo and behold, 50 feet down the alley was a small blackboard stating, "Today's special, brown rice and fresh vegetables." I hung my head in both relief and gratitude, but I would soon find out that I hadn't seen anything yet. The sign led to a narrow staircase that wound down to a small restaurant. It was just perfect for the mood I was in. I ordered, and a deep peace came over me as I enjoyed the great meal that life had provided me. There was one thing, however, that was disturbing my peaceful respite. From the time I entered the restaurant, the man behind the checkout counter kept staring at me. It was enough to make me a little uncomfortable. When I was done eating, instead of the waiter bringing me the bill, the man behind the counter brought it to me. As I reached for my wallet, he asked me a question. "By any chance, are you Mickey Singer?" I was completely stunned as the unlikely sequence of events that brought me to this restaurant flashed through my mind. What in the world was this? I didn't know this person. I responded affirmatively, and the energy between us became intensely spiritual. He said that I wouldn't remember him, but he remembered me. Back in 1972, more than 16 years ago, he was hitchhiking through Gainesville, and I had picked him up in my VW van. He had been going through a very difficult period in his life, and he asked me about the picture of Yogananda on my dashboard. I explained to him that I was heavy into yoga and was studying the teachings of this great yoga master. When he reached Atlanta, he was walking by a bookstore and saw Yogananda's picture in the storefront window. He went in and purchased a copy of Autobiography of a Yogi, as I had encouraged him to do. Apparently, it changed his life. He ended up meeting Baba during the world tour and was now living in a yoga center in Boston. He said he had often wondered if I had ever met Baba, and then he saw a picture of us together at Disney World. It brought him great joy, and he prayed that someday he would have the opportunity to thank me in person for the important role I had played in his awakening. with that prayer, now miraculously answered, he stood quietly before me with tears in his eyes and uttered, "Thank you." That said, he turned and walked away. As I headed down the alley toward my car, I looked back at the blackboard that had lured me into this unbelievable event. I remembered that before I walked into that restaurant, I thought I knew what was going on. A very interesting flow of events had brought me to my brown rice and vegetables. I was wrong. It was much bigger than that. It's always much bigger than that. For everyone. I was so glad I had decided to devote my life to learning to surrender. I didn't know what was going on, and I had reached the point of not even wanting to know. I just wanted to cease to interfere with the perfection of life. Apparently, even a business trip to Boston is fair game for a miracle. Section 7. When dark clouds become rainbows. Chapter 39. A Touch of Magic. My birth sign is Taurus, and my nature has always been to just settle in and do my work. I wasn't the type of person who was always looking for change. I enjoyed the repetition of a stable lifestyle and gradual, sustainable growth. Both the business and the temple went through natural stages in their growth. I always thought each stage would become the steady state. By the early 1990s, I certainly felt that we were done with our rapid growth. Personalized programming was in phenomenal shape. We were up to 20 employees, and the bottom line was netting a few million dollars a year. I still had not changed my personal lifestyle, so I continued using the money to build up an endowment for the temple and to support various charities. At that time, Barb was living in my house, and I was in a small guest accommodation in the building the temple used for dinners. This building had a long wooden boardwalk stretching across the wetlands area, connecting it with Personalized Programming's office. That walk was my commute to work. Those of us living at the temple were all working hard and keeping morning and evening services together. People from the Gainesville community were coming out regularly for my Monday and Thursday night talks, and a large crowd always found their way out on Sunday mornings. Things were good, and I thought the period of crazy growth was over. Apparently, I was wrong. To understand the next wave of growth, it is important to understand what was going on inside of me at the time. All the events that had unfolded so far in my experiment with surrender had shown me that the more I was willing to let go of the inner noise created by my personal likes and dislikes, the more I could see subtle synchronicities in what was unfolding around me. These unexpected concurrences of events were like messages from life, gently nudging me in the direction she was going. I listened to these subtle nudges instead of listening to the not-so-subtle mental and emotional reactions caused by my personal preferences. This is how I practice surrender in everyday life, and the purpose of all these stories is to share with you the perfection of the journey that unfolded. Take the case of the temple property. As I've already mentioned, we had no interest in owning a lot of land, yet over the years, the temple would end up with an enormous amount of property, and each purchase along the way seemed to have something magical about it. Such was the case in October 1990 when I received a call regarding a piece of property that had come up for sale in our area. The realtor said it was 85 acres of combined woods and field, and it was considered one of the most beautiful pieces of land in Alachua County. I told him that I doubted we would be interested since our primary interest was in land that bordered the temple property. He insisted on giving me a tour, and we were both very surprised when we discovered that this exquisite piece of land actually did border directly on the temple's lease land. That was enough of a nudge for me. I put out a minimal amount of effort, and the purchase just seemed to fall into place by itself. I considered that land a gift from the universe. It came to us completely unexpectedly, and I was speechless seeing how these properties were lining up